Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Cool Project Show. I am your host, Michelle Molyneux, and we'll be covering projects from around the world, whether it's home renovation, car restoration, construction, heritage restoration, it could be art projects or do-it-yourself. These are people who have projects and share their experiences with you. This morning, we are going to have a wonderful session with Julie Bauer, Executive Director and Founder of Working Bridges, based in Iowa. An amazing lady who has a passion for restoring heritage bridges across America. Welcome to the show, Julie.
Oh, good morning, Michelle. Nice to be here.
Before we talk about your bridge projects, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and your passion behind bridges?
Well, sure. I'm born and raised in a small town in Iowa, and my family had often gone to the river in the fall to enjoy what we called Skunk River Sundays. And we only did it in the fall because otherwise it was too many bugs, the grasses were too tall. It was just nice in the fall to get out and have a fire and cook over it with cast iron and, you know, lovely recipes. So when I moved back to Iowa from California in 2001, we restarted those Skunk River Sundays. And later in 2009, our bridge was threatened with demolition. And it was a 1883 King Iron Bridge Company bowstring arch bridge. Our county was going to destroy it because it had been damaged by ice flows. And we stepped in and got a stay of execution, if you will, and tried to save it. You know, these projects, I knew nothing at the time. And the funny story is I ran 700 minutes up on my family plan with my daughter, who was the executor of those minutes. And she called me saying, "Mom, what are you doing?" So that's how we started the project in 2009. And we didn't have the right legal agreements to pull that bridge in February 2010. That it just wasn't in place, and although we had the cranes there to do it, we legally couldn't pull the bridge. In August the next year, 10 inches of rain fell, and the bridge was swept off its piers. And at that time, I met Nels Rayner of Box Steel in Michigan, and he came to Iowa, and he pulled that bridge out of the river, and we tried for a long time to restore it there in the county, but they really didn't want it, and they said they didn't want it, and they meant it. So the story of that bridge led to us working with other people that wanted to save their historic bridges. And that's how Working Bridges started.
Can you tell me a little bit more about some of these bridges that, you know, why there is that passion now for you?
Well, the passion is that we are so removed from our natural environments anymore. And these bridges are generally abandoned or nearly abandoned out in areas that have not been developed. So they have a great way of getting you back to the river. And that's science and business. It's everything wrapped into one with these bridges. They're going so quickly that it seemed that if we could try to save one, you know, it would help us save others. It's very difficult to raise money in donations for these bridges. We haven't captured how they really are for people and their mental and well-being, because people just think, oh, that's old iron. That can't be fixed. You can't weld old iron. Nobody hot rivets anymore. When, in fact, all those things are untrue. One of the reasons that we are losing these bridges is that engineering firms would really prefer to do the study on the old bridge and then design the new bridge. So there is a conflict of interest happening all over America with engineers that would prefer a new contract. Can't blame them for that. A lot of them don't understand that these bridges are made of parts that are doable, and parts are parts. Even I, as a woman, know that.
Now, with these bridges, you talked about how these bridges can be repurposed. I guess my question would be, what kinds of bridges are we talking about? I know you've mentioned truss bridges, but maybe some people don't know, understand the language around bridges and the types of bridges that are out there.
So this is really how I, from knowing nothing 5-6 years ago, I guess six now, to understanding the different types of trusses. So back in the 1800s and before, we made little bridges out of rock, stone. And those are generally arch bridges, and the arch has been a standard in construction forever. That arch became a bridge made out of iron. And that was the beginning of these engineers in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, really experimenting with different types of truss design. So you have the bowstring arch, which has a bottom cord, and it's kept in tension just like, you know, when you're shooting an arrow. Then that developed into the Warren truss, which has, looks like a W without any real verticals in it. That got modified. Then you got a Pratt truss, which had segmented panels in it and could extend and go longer. So the longest bowstring was 190 feet. Generally, they were 120 or 130 feet long. The Pratt trusses allowed you to go much longer than that. Then you had modified Pratts that became Parker trusses, Baltimore trusses, and other derivatives that helped these bridges get bigger and stronger to carry more length and carry more load, essentially. Until and all of those bridges were pin-connected, which means, you know, and that gets into engineer speak, and we should probably talk about that later.
And now, can you tell me just a little bit about your organization, Working Bridges? How do you work with these bridges and with organizations who want to restore bridges?
Okay, so Working Bridges, and that's working with an apostrophe, Bridges, is a company that we're operating underneath the umbrella of our nonprofit called the North Skunk River Greenbelt Association. That was where our bridge was, and so that's where that started. It's way too long. That was a lawyer's name. We were just the Friends of the Skunk River Bridge when we started. We determined that it was very difficult to raise funds, very difficult to write grants for these bridges. Writing grants for grants was a lengthy process that you didn't know if you would get a grant, and you were not able to do any work while you had written the grant. So it was very bureaucratic and hard to work with for someone from Iowa that just wanted to get something done. So we started Working Bridges as a contracting arm that could go out and do consulting to other groups about what the cost of a bridge restoration might be. And we did a movie that really explained what we do with a project in Texas of a Pratt Trust that worked out quite great, and it's on YouTube under Working Bridges, Historic Truss Bridge Restoration. So that helped. It's had over 2,000 views now, and social media and the climate for bridge restoration and the fact that there are people all over the country that love their bridges. And that's really what it is. It's these bridges were a sign of civilization, really. I mean, they were what settled the U.S. I don't know about Canada, but they settled the U.S. with these kind of bridges, and they delivered them via a train, and the locals would assemble them because it was like an erector set, essentially. Mm-hmm. So, and they didn't cost very much. You know, you see the records in the courthouses that $2,500 got you a bridge. That got you your goods from the farm to the market. Most of these bridges started at mill sites that are no longer remaining, but the bridges were to get, again, your goods to market. And before that, they were forged. So if you go way back, you would see that our Native Americans would have been using the same spots to cross.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, you talked about the engineers who would soon rather create new bridges. Do you have a way of even trying to convince them or talk to them about, maintaining the heritage of these bridges, and what kind of buy-in do you need to give them to get them on board?
Oh, we really don't try very much anymore. If somebody has the passion to come to us with engineering experience, we would love to work with them. And we have found a few engineers that that have the experience in these truss bridges where they do truss the pins and they do truss the engineering design. They were overbuilt at the time because now we can use computers that narrow every inch of steel that you might need in a bridge. These bridges were built to last, and they were built with a sense of design and a sense of, wow, we could make this really pretty. Not just the utilitarian stuff that we're getting today with concrete bridges. The concrete bridges really remove us from our landscape. And I think that's one of the holes in the consciousness here, is that we can't see how high the river is when we're crossing a concrete bridge.
Right, that's true. That's true. Now, also, what are some of the critical, what at some point, when do you say you can't restore this bridge? What are some of the critical things that you need to take a look at when making the decision of restoring a bridge?
Well, when we go to look at a bridge, and that's what we do, we try to go look at it and make that analysis that, yes, this bridge can be restored for this amount of money before you go into a very extensive engineering study of the bridge and its components and, you know, where the problems are. Working with our engineer and our craftsman is really what Working Bridges brings to the table. I'm just the putter together of that relationship. And then I can go talk to people because my bridge was in the water, so I understand what they're feeling. And I can generally break down the engineer's speak to a layman's speak.
Layman's term. Yeah. And is it usually the community that comes out together? I know you had talked about sometimes, you know, state and local governments don't have the funding to fund the restoration of bridges. So what kinds of things do they normally do?
Well, the states, you know, they are. The funding is not there. And many states have created fracture critical inspections that are required annually that are expensive. So most of these bridges have trickled down to county governments, and they will just abandon them, which is when we come in. Sometimes they are starting to work towards making them vehicular. It really just depends. Every bridge project is different. About the non-restorable ones, we've even seen the ones where the section loss, which is where the iron has disappeared because of some cause. There's always some cause. In Pennsylvania, the cause is they put graded steel decking on the bulk of their bridges in the 80s, 90s, sometimes. That allowed the salts and solvents to be plowed straight underneath to the lower chord of a bridge structure. So the floor beams and the stringers would start to rust out. That's section loss. We've seen that in a small bridge in which you would think should just be scrapped, but working with our craftsmen, this little bridge in Mountaintop, Pennsylvania called Mary Street, which is a very unique bridge in that it's a pony truss and it's just a laced girder riveted bridge. So no pins, just iron. It's very cool. It was over a cut where a railroad had gone through for over 100 years, and the caustic nature of the steam from the engine caused section loss like we had never seen, which caused the popping out of rivets because it just expands the packed rust that comes between the plates. So our solution to that, which has been adopted by the state of Pennsylvania in terms of real numbers that we provide, because we're a construction company, we provide a real estimate of what we think a bridge will cost to repair so that people can make good decisions around that. Mary Street will be repaired by cutting off the bottom of those lacing bars and pushing up the material so that it is all the same. We've just taken out the bad part and re-riveted it together.
So what we're going to do is we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll come right back with Julie and hear more about some of these amazing bridge projects. We'll be right back.
Your auto love and investment demands the best, and for 45 years, Passport Transport has been meeting those demands. From manufacturers to the one-car collectors and all other facets of the auto industry and antique auto hobby, the first and the finest with unequaled service and peace of mind. Passport Transport, your auto transportation company. Contact PassportTransport.com with your need today. Passport Transport.
Buzz off with Lawyer Liz. Join me each week, Wednesdays at 2 o'clock, as we talk drones, Internet of Things, and technology.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren, on Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the second segment of the Cool Project Show. And today we're talking to Julie Bowers of Working Bridges in Iowa. One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Julie, is why are we losing these bridges across America?
Well, I started to explain that, you know, counties can't afford them. With traffic being so much bigger today, that is a real concern for people. They just can't take that kind of heavy loading and the height and width requirements. You may have seen some bridges go down recently in the U.S. where GPS and truck drivers really didn't mix very well. And you know, we'll talk about those engineering elements. I'm just going to bring them up right now, Michelle, because fracture-critical bridges means that the redundancy isn't there to stop a bridge from collapsing if it is hit by some force, okay? So that's what that means. Functionally obsolete and structurally deficient mean, again, the same thing. Functionally obsolete mean that they can't handle the height or width of today's traffic. And structurally deficient means, again, that they don't have those redundancies. So generally in these pin connected bridges, many engineers say, no, we're not going to do it. We have to get away from them. They can go be repurposed somewhere else. The Piano Bridge in Texas, however, was repurposed as a vehicular bridge. And the commissioner there is delighted that that portion of his road isn't affected by overweight vehicles. So overweight and bigger isn't going to work forever. I know there are people that work on those situations. For these bridges, that's pretty much, if they're rural and have very little traffic, why not fix them for vehicular? It's expensive. They're big projects. So we are starting to see some of that. There is just more trending up of people trying to save their bridges going, no, wait a minute. These bridges are about the only thing anymore that make a place unique. You know, I will mention the Comer Bridge right now. The Comer Bridge was 2,156 feet of glorious state-of-the-art 1930 multi-span bridge and cantilever through truss with Warren trusses with long approaches, beautiful over the Tennessee River that then was flooded the TVA for their purposes, and it's still a beautiful spot. So a group of friends tried to save that bridge. We had every intention of saving that bridge, and it was stopped by one person at the executive director level of Alabama DOT, who said that this bridge had to be owned by a government entity, and no one wanted to take it on. They would not allow our nonprofit to purchase that bridge, even though in Huntsville, the land trust would have run a trail over it. We did an economic impact study that said it would bring millions of dollars to the Scottsboro, Alabama area. And politics got in the way. So that bridge will be destroyed, even though it could have had a very successful life being repurposed next to two new bridges. Again, it's still being used by big trucks on a one-way basis, and they are going to throw it away rather than give it to our nonprofit so that we could manage it and bring in potentially a lot of money to save bridges, because, again, the donations are hard to get for bridge restoration or the awareness, and this radio program will help with that, and I appreciate you allowing us to speak on this because it's so important to all of America. They are disappearing so quickly, we can't get to them all. But the awareness is rising.
Right. Now, you actually mentioned about repurposing bridges. So these bridges, I have read that some people may convert them into, like, walking gardens. What other ways or what other tools do they use or ideas do they use to actually repurpose these bridges? So it may not be for a car, but what else do they use them for?
Well, recreational purposes for bicycles, pedestrians, horses, is important. The garden bridges where you can just, you know, meander and see this beautiful spot is great. There are some really successful bridge projects in urban areas that have really taken off. The High Line in New York City is one of those. It's just extremely popular gardens in what would have been otherwise impossible, but it's raised off the street and it's very popular. They've done a great job as a nonprofit to make that railroad bridge work. And they've done a lot of things to help us with solutions that they've come to for their restoration purposes. Another one is in Poughkeepsie, New York, where people are walking their bridge and having a club to see if they walk it every day. Wellness would have been a big deal for the Comer Bridge. Walking that bridge would have been a wonderful way to do something. We're just shocked that Scottsboro, Alabama could not, or Jackson County could not, see the value and the economic gain of keeping that bridge. And we jumped through a lot of hoops. We were going to give them a lot of money to make sure that if we failed, we would tear it down. Just give us a chance. We didn't get that chance. We don't always win. Even when we get some yeses, we don't always win.
Oh, no.
Sometimes we win, though. And that's what keeps us going. And we're starting to win more. And that's what keeps us going, too.
So, yeah, and so can we just start, because you have a lot of bridge projects. So can you tell me about some of the bridge projects that you actually have on the go right now and some that you've done in the past as well?
Well, on the go right now, we are really working it very hard. We have a project in Delaware that will be announced on April 18th that we have been working with for over a year to provide historic bridges for a trail project. Which is very exciting. Our Bowstring, by the way, is part of that project and is leaving Iowa to go to Delaware. It has been, for the most part, fully restored now. The vertical posts have been refabricated. They're beautiful. We have some truss work to do before that goes to the painter. So that one's very exciting. We're able to save bridges from different states, take them to Delaware where they don't have many bridges, and have a real success with a very creative public and private development there. So read more about that on Cool Project under Work and Bridges, because that's going to be very exciting. I don't want to go too much into that.
That's almost like a sanctuary for heritage bridges.
Exactly, and it was one person that made the difference, going, yep, you know, competitively this is working against the print a bridge industry, if you will, or the people that are welding steel bridges together. We're able to reuse a resource. We are able to do more about telling the story of our country and the history of those bridges. It does a whole lot more for an area than just sticking a fiberglass bridge on it. So, and they're beautiful. So they were made when the idea of form and function and beauty, all, you know, the craftsmen wanted to showcase their work. They had time to do that, I guess. But the bridges that we look at are stunning. And now that project in Delaware, which came about from our work in Pennsylvania, providing scope of work and estimates for a series of bridges through Preservation Pennsylvania and their work with Pennsylvania DOT. Pennsylvania DOT has a lot of bridges, and they are working very hard in their Bridges for Sale program to make it affordable for people or groups, friends groups, to take on a bridge. And they let us come in and provide them what our estimate for repair of some of the bridges on their Bridges for Sale program would be. One of those has gone to Delaware, and another one was potentially going to Delaware, but I believe it's now going to Pennsylvania, just over the state line from Delaware, where that one guy has made a contact and said, well, why don't you continue using historic bridges for your footbridges? There are so many of them that have been abandoned. So we're going to try to take care of them one at a time, or 10 at a time if we could. It takes a long time. They're expensive projects. They take planning. And after 5 years, I feel like I have a master's in it.
I know that you had mentioned that there was a bridge in Oregon that you were looking at. So maybe go through that process of locating a bridge and exactly what it is that you do when it comes to, like, purchasing.
Okay, the bridge in Oregon, that one is still, after a year and a half, we're still waiting on that one. But here's how that went down. There are two websites that deal with historic bridges. One is called bridgehunter.com, and the people, it's like Wikipedia bridges. People log in bridges all over the country, and they log in press items about bridges all over the country, and Google alerts for bridges all over the country. So we get a fair amount of information coming from places. Historicbridges.org is also another place where we would look to see what's going on in the bridge world. So we find this out, and then I'll make a call to those people and try to find out the perfect person to talk to. In this case, the bridge we're talking about is a beautiful, very historic Whipple truss called the Hayden Bridge. It's located in Springfield, Oregon, and it is currently owned by Weyerhaeuser. And it has been abandoned since 1989, I believe. They used to run it as a spur to bring timber into their mill there in Springfield. So it has been abandoned. It has layers and layers of chain link fence trying to keep people off of it. It's beautiful. It is next to another bridge, and Weyerhaeuser was putting out bids to get rid of it, demolish it. I called the woman at Weyerhaeuser and said, I think we could save it. But we do charge when we go on these site visits a nominal amount. It's enough to cover our time and expenses for a couple of days to take three people out to assess a bridge. So in this case, we only took two, and we did it for far less. Got it approved through Weyerhaeuser. They paid for us to come to Oregon to look at their bridge, and as far as removal, and we would have taken it to Delaware. They would have been happy to take that bridge, believe me. It was too expensive, and the bond that was required by the new bridge was $800,000 for removal, not non-refundable. So Weyerhaeuser decided that they were not going to take action on the Hayden Bridge. And we all just sat there. But one of the things that I do is I keep calling. I think if you talk to anybody, you'll know that I just keep calling until you'll talk to me and tell me, you know, yes or no or why. So I kept up with this woman in Oregon, and she got, you know, her tail was between her legs. She got defeated. She was just giving me a little time to leave. We'll regroup. Well, we have regrouped to the point where they will give Working Bridges $25,000 to run a design contest around a park around keeping the Hayden Bridge right there in Springfield, Oregon, putting planks on it and railing and lighting and seeing if that can't just be a wonderful thing. So where we step in is that we are the interim owner then. And we can take that on. We can run a design project. I've got all kinds of friends, the Oregon DOT, that are just waiting to jump on this as a real win and to help mentor some younger engineers and designers on how to build a park. What great fun. So that's what we're doing there. And I am hopeful that we will have the purchase agreement in hand here real soon so that we can get that one started. Portland Waterworks Bridge, which we did buy and which we have moved from, they had disassembled that big bridge in Sandy, Oregon, and we were able to purchase it from the city of Portland, and it is in storage now awaiting its future. So we do save them.
Be right back. We're going to hear some more messages from our sponsors, and then we will talk to Julie about some of her partners and more about her projects. We'll be right back.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
And welcome back to Cool Projects. Today we have Julie Bowers, who is very passionate about bridges, and she's the executive director of Working Bridges. And we have been talking about some of Julie's amazing projects. Julie, can you tell us a little bit more about some of the projects that you are currently working on?
Well, sure. So in this last year, Working Bridges has become more of a contractor than it ever has been in the last couple of years. So we were mostly consulting, and then we found out that if we could come in and be a contractor on these bridges, even if we had to own them, which becomes a way of preserving them, we can do the kind of restoration that we like to do, which is called in-kind restoration. And that means that we replace a part with a similar part. If we can't purchase it, we make it. And so the bridges look like they did when they were new and delivered by auction, if you will. So we have a lot of projects going on now, and it's very fun. It's taken, you know, these are big projects. So I'll talk about one we looked at in our first year called the Long Shoals Bridge in Fort Scott, Kansas. The Long Shoals Bridge is beautiful. It's 175 feet long. It has vertical portals that are beefy and beautiful and very ornate. And it was a flip of a coin between two coal truck operators that decided who was going to drive across this bridge first. And, of course, it went through. So this bridge has been abandoned with three missing floor beams and the pins pulled right out of it. Talk about fracture critical. It just pulled it right out. And in that case, that overweight vehicle destroyed this bridge, and it's been sitting there. So I made a cold call to the commissioners of that county, Bourbon County in Kansas, and never forget it. And they go, well, we have the Fort Scott Bourbon County Riverfront Authority, and we had no idea that we would be responsible for that bridge, and we need a bridge for the Riverfront Authority, and why don't you talk to the banker over here? And we did that, and we set up a site visit with them, and we came and looked at several bridges for them. And that was almost 5 years ago now, which is how it works. They have continued to develop their park, and in the past year they contacted us about that they were ready to move ahead with this bridge. And we had gone through the process of getting permission to move this National Register historic bridge from the National Park Service and the keeper of the historic register. So we went through the whole process with Kansas State Historic Society, with the county and city, Fort Scott and Bourbon County, and have permission, and they have a cost, and it's quite expensive. It's a big bridge. So we put together a grant for the transportation alternative programs for them just this past fall. That outlined how we would remove that bridge from the river, transport it to Michigan where we get all of our work done, and then transport it back and erect it in the city of Fort Scott right next to the fort and the National Cemetery. And, you know, it's a big deal to be able to work within that framework of history. And rather than them using a prefab bridge that they had planned for their crossing, they are going to use this beautiful historic bridge that was 12 miles away from their city. So that's a pretty cool project, don't you think?
I think that's an amazing project. And can you tell me a little bit more about the Delaware? I'm very intrigued about the Delaware project as well.
We are under contract for three bridges right now. We are hoping to have two more under contract, and with the private developers around that project, the possibility of several others. So that's exciting, and one of the bridges that we are taking to Delaware and we have the engineered plans for is coming out of Michigan, where the bulk of our work is being done. And it is coming off the Shiawassee River. It's called the Martin Road Bridge. It is threatened with while being abandoned, its rubble abutment is starting to give way. So unless the county did something, there was, which they were not inclined to do, this bridge had has every risk against it falling down. So so the Martin Road Bridge is coming off. Now, the cool part about the Martin Road Bridge is that it's a very unique Pratt truss. It's 120 feet long, and it has some very unusual details. Again, going back to those 1880s when they were patenting different ways to build these bridges. Now, it's the Mount Vernon Bridge Company, and we have through, and we're going to talk about them soon, I'm just leading up to it, a brilliant mind that said, you know, we have no way to get a crane in here to pull this bridge. And we went to the county. They have a dollar they're waiting to spend as soon as we can pull this bridge. We have the permits from Michigan's DEQ on pulling the bridge. But we couldn't put a crane in there because of utilities and the way the small road, there was no place for a crane pad without removing a lot of trees. The mind of the craftsman said, we're going to go old school here and use shoring towers underneath that will, and then we'll disassemble the bridge over the river that way. We got a permit from Michigan DEQ in 5 days because we weren't going to tear out anything. We're going to rest on top and remove it very quickly using a smaller crane at the end of the approach to pull the pieces out. So that shoring tower was designed by Penta Engineering out of Alabama. And I can't wait to see it deployed. It's been erected in the shop yard, and it looks like it's going to work. We're just waiting for, you know, about 10 days where we can put it in the river where the hydrology, and I had to go to the engineer and say, you have to give me the equation. How does one measure what we need in order to safely put these shoring towers in the river? So what it came out to is that we need the river to be less than 4 feet, and the flow of the river divided by the width of the river, it all comes out to whether we can put that shoring tower in the water or whether it needs to be beefed up, if you will.
Right.
So that's exciting. The Martin Road Bridge will be coming off soon. And, you know, with our new Working Bridges page on the Cool Projects site, you know, you'll be able to see a lot more of what we're doing there. You can also check us out on Facebook under Working Bridges because that's generally where we're putting a lot of our information, and soon it will all filter through our relationship with you, Michelle, which is the cool part of this whole talk, because we're not talking about what Cool Projects can do and why we're choosing to use Cool Projects to document our stories. Right?
Right. That's great. Now, there's another bridge project that I've been following quite dearly, and it was the Bunker Mill, because that's an amazing story. Can you tell the audience about that and the history of that particular bridge?
Sure. The Bunker Mill Bridge. Well, again, there was a mention of the Bunker Mill Bridge in BridgeHunter.com in August of 2013, that an arsonist, it was a link to a newspaper article, arsonist burns Bunker Mill Bridge. This was a bridge that was used in a Patty Duke movie, if you will. I don't remember the name of it. I'm sorry. I don't think it was A Bridge to Nowhere, but it might have been. It was an Amish story. So Kelowna, Iowa is an Amish an English community. It's part of the larger Washington County. This bridge was burned. No one has yet identified the arsonist, although I've had the kids come up and tell me who it was, so, you know, whatever. It doesn't concern me too much, except that we did put steel stringers on this bridge in order to mitigate any further damage that might come from people being stupid. And you know, as a director of a nonprofit, we really have to, that's our only worry, is this people being stupid on our bridges and in our bridge parks that we're trying to develop and how one maintains that. I'm not one for all the rules, but we've paid dearly for the liability insurance that we've gotten now that we are working with bigger governmental entities. and that we needed to do this construction work, to be the real contractors that can come in and do the work, which is what we're doing at Bunker Mill. We stepped in, we helped form a friends group. They became a trademark under our nonprofit corporation so that they could take donations right away and that we could help them through the hurdles of what it means to own a bridge. And that's hard when you're not a government entity. The county wanted to be rid of this bridge, to be shed of it. That's what they say here. And they were willing, and we came in and asked for the demolition funds that was coming because it was a hazard. The planks were still hanging off it when I first saw it. I did not get arrested, though I was trespassing, and met the county engineer, of course. So you know, the stories of politics and supervisors and counties, and they gave us $80,000, which we put towards the phase one of the bridge, which was to lift it an inch, maybe 2 inches with a crane, and slide the pins out, release the I-bars that were damaged again from it having had dirt and debris on it causing section loss. We added I-bar sections to E10, slid the pins back in, cleaned out the roller bars under the expansion end of the bridge, put them back in, put in a new beam across between the portal bracing, and put it back down again. So that was very exciting, although people thought we did nothing because it, you know, when we do the work, the parts look the same.
So now, coming back to the Bunker Mill project, is that bridge now completed, or what is the next steps?
Well, the bridge has had a very difficult time raising money after that first influx of $80,000, plus the nearly, I would say close to $50,000 of initial fundraising of in-kind and actual cash donations. So the bulk of that money was spent in the first phase. We have run music events, and the Friends have had a successful booth at the Kelowna Historic Village every September that has raised funds to help them continue. They've acquired a historic building and are trying to run a marketplace out of it. The Bunker Mill project is nearly completed. Anybody's donation would be a wonderful thing for them and us, because we'd like to see it completed with the curb and the safety railing, and you'll be able to see more images of that on Cool Projects on that page, which you've helped to create, Michelle, and I'm going to give you all the credit for that and my gratitude, because as the executive director of a very grassroots organization, I'm wearing a lot of hats, and I don't always have time to really get to that point. But again, how you sold me on that when we met it at Pike Place in Seattle was that the outcome of using Cool Projects would be the book and the story and the ability to have multiple voices telling the story of these projects, because they're big, and I can't see all the viewpoints. I can very much see mine and what it means now to be a contractor, and that's new for me. This is a late career, and it's not exactly the role that I ever saw myself in as the rule person. I had to step in with a drunk guy with a chainsaw the other day. Nobody else would. And I stepped up and I said, "You need to turn that off." He looked at me, goes, "Do you own this chainsaw?" I said, "I do not, but I do own this bridge," and turn that off.
So now what we're going to do is we're going to do a quick little break on the Cool Project show, and we'll talk some more with Julie and some of her amazing bridge projects, and then we'll talk about some of her partners. So come back, and we'll be right here.
45 years of experience is behind the most trusted name in auto transportation. Passport Transport, the first and finest today. That's why Passport Transport is the preferred auto transport for major auto manufacturers, concours, museums, tours, and collectors, and should be your choice from across the state to across the country. When you have the need, go to PassportTransport.com and enjoy the peace of mind referenced experience will give you. Passport Transport.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is America's Webradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to our latest segment of our cool show called Cool Projects. And we've been talking to Julie of Working Bridges in Iowa. Julie, one of the things you've talked a lot throughout the show about some of your partners and your team members. It does take a large group of people to work on some of these projects. Can you give me talk to us about who are your partners and who are your team members, and also who are the supporters of your Working Bridges?
Okay. First off, our board of directors and the president of our board, Diane Roth. She's been my president and on our board since the beginning, and she's kept me from quitting many times when I just said, you know what, this isn't happening. I can't live like this anymore in the early days of it being extremely hard, and how do you make it to the next day? And I committed full-time to this really pretty early on, and I, you know, make my quarter an hour, essentially, trying to make this thing happen, because at my age, you know, what is my career? I'm a contractor. I save bridges. This is what I do. But I couldn't do it without our board of directors, and that includes J. Dean Good and Doris Park and Scott Allen. At the moment, we're adding my daughter, Lauren Bowers, to the board, and we are currently looking for other board members that want to help us now that we've grown in how we move forward, and we want to start that conversation for sure. So that's our board of directors, and that's been very important. We've had other very special friends that have been on that board. My dad was on the board. He passed away a couple years ago, but he was a sage and sound advice of an Iowa contractor and firefighter, fire chief. So he was really instrumental in getting me back to my roots as a contractor. So I'll give him all the credit for that. Bill Bashan, countless others who gave us donations early on to save our bridge. There are so many, but some large donations. Brownells Incorporated, straight out of Montezuma, Iowa, gave us some $20,000 over the years, and I'm sure they will be happy to see our progress in Delaware, although we couldn't keep our bridge in Powhatan County. So the donors are huge, and they do help us when grants and other funds aren't available. So that's pretty cool. But then it really is the team. And I mentioned Box Steel Rivet Gang, but really the guy is Nels Rayner. He has over 20 years experience as a iron worker in Michigan. And I mentioned that mostly now I'm in Michigan because that's where the craftsmen are and the engineers that we work with. So Nels Rayner of Box Steel, he has a great gang of guys, Lee and Derek and Andy right now, and Nathan, that work within the framework of his and my collaboration, which we started in, 2010, I guess that's when, maybe 2011, that we started Working Bridges as that collaboration between the craftsmen and me to go out and find a way to save these bridges. We added James Schiffer, Jim of Schiffer Engineering, out of Schiffer Group Engineering, out of Traverse City, Michigan, who had some passion and history in in working with these bridges and had worked with Davis Construction, who had done the piano bridge first, which was part of our first documentary. We tried to get that job. We ended up being helpful to Davis to get that job in Texas, and I was allowed to record it because you can listen to me talk all day, but actually watching the movie shows you that it is an erector set and that we do have a passion for repairing our history. And while these are big projects, once we do them, they will last for generations. And so Bunker Mill is a great example of how we could sell off naming rights to Bridge Park. So people bought over 120 planks to have their number branded into the plank. They bought stringers, and that was $100. So a stringer was $450, and a floor beam, you know, and by that way, we were able to raise funds that now the planks and the stringers are on this bridge. It is ready for the railing, which is very costly because, well, it just takes a lot of time to do a rail the way it should be done, again, by Box Steel. And they hot rivet, and they let me hot rivet sometimes, but they are quite a gang now that is extremely efficient at doing bridges. And I'm totally delighted that our contracts are such that I can keep them more busy than we ever have in the past. So that collaboration between Box Steel and Working Bridges, or NSRGA, is what caused Working Bridges to start. Adding the engineer to the team when we need to, and Jim is able to be licensed in any state now that we go to, so he has really grown with us. We look at potentially adding other engineers as we can. It seems like it's easier to work within Michigan. We have worked with Hearn Messler, part of the historic bridge early days people, and he has done a lot towards the work with historic metals and riveting, and runs workshops out of Lansing Community College. Vern was the first person on our site that said, yeah, you can save this bridge even if it goes in the water. Well, you know, truer words were never spoken, but had that bridge not hit the water, we wouldn't be out here helping to save other bridges. So that led us to Beach and Rich in Battle Creek, who has expended effort in doing the lead abatement for our bridges. We found that it is more affordable for everybody if we come in, take them off the river, disassemble them, ship them back to Michigan for restoration and then for lead abatement and painting before we ship them on to wherever they're going to be re-erected. And then they get planked, and it's all very exciting, and it works, and it's affordable. And, you know, rather than trying to find a space where they're at. So that's pretty exciting. I can't speak highly enough of Nels and Jim and what the three of us are capable of doing with the support of our board of directors and the support of the team around us that we do listen to. But we're contractors and we're responsible, and sometimes that responsibility can weigh pretty heavy for the things that you don't expect. So that's what we're trying to mitigate now. And
Do you get a lot of support from government agencies like the Department of Transport in your goals in restoring some of these bridges?
Oh, yes. Almost in every state and the state historic offices. So, and they're starting to put more money to it. So I'm going to name several people. Kara Russell at PennDOT in their Bureau of Project Delivery has really read up on Section 106 and preservation guidelines and is able to get more money for the potential reuse of a bridge now in her and their department's quest for their Bridges for Sale program. We have Tom Barrett for Ohio DOT, who the same thing, went back and reread the act to save things and have found ways for the Federal Highway Administration to allow more money for the preservation, and that might be the engineering and the transportation as well as the disassembly that would have been in demo funds originally. So they found us some more money, and that will help us find the clients that can take on the bridges. So Working Bridges becomes the interim owner of these, and that works for Delaware. And I hope you bring me back on for a short segment when that is announced. It's not very far away, and it lets us chat again. But that's what we're doing. We have developed a process. We hit challenges every day, you know, but such a great team to work with, and I do trust them. And I think they're starting to trust me, too. So even though I occasionally get the words wrong, I call the beam at the portal a portal beam. Even though it's not a portal beam, it's just a floor beam. But to me, it identifies where it is, and I think it helps the layman, too. So I will continue to try to describe the parts. And I had a woman come up to me at the hotel bridge in Leeds, Massachusetts, part of Northampton, and the engineer and the Leeds Civic Association got together and were able to merge money to bring us out there on a site visit. We got there at the end of their snowstorm 2 years ago. You know, they just had snow forever in Massachusetts, and we got there because we wanted to be able to get on the ice to inspect this bridge. This bridge was closed by an engineering firm after 3 years that said, it's closed, you can't fix it. Well, we know we can fix it, but we can't get the early engineering firm to give us any numbers and why they did this, and here's how you do it. We've lost the city engineer now, and so we're regrouping and going to write a letter saying, hey, we can save your bridge and we can open it, and here's how you do it. We just need to be able to get those jobs. You know, it's hard to then go bid them. So we're looking for contractors all over the country or engineers that want to work with us to help save these bridges and learn the techniques that we use and you know, get the experience of experienced craftsmen, because it really, the apprentice training that we could provide is huge. And we're a nonprofit. We have that ability to expand our mission to training. And that really is the thing.
Now, we're just going to be wrapping up pretty soon, but just tell me very briefly, what are the next steps for Working Bridges?
Briefly? Oh, sorry.
It's
the conversation. It's the conversation that we have to start, and this is the future, getting the word out to people that there is a firm like ours that takes action. And I think that's what the apostrophe means. In our name is that we are action-oriented, and we will give you an answer, and it's not going to cost a whole lot of money. And then you can go forward and make a good decision, and that really, you know, getting the conversation started. I love hearing the stories of people around their bridges. They all have them. The Amish have them. Oh, riding in the high wagon across that bridge was a little scary. Or I always raised my feet in the car because I didn't want to feel the rumble of the bridge. Or the piano bridge in Texas, it sounded like a xylophone. That's why they called it a piano. And they could tell who was crossing it. So the stories are what intrigue me.
Okay, good. Now, so this is going to be a wrap from our show for today. I want to give a big thank you to Julie Bowers of Working Bridges and sharing her story and her passion about bridge restorations across the U.S. If you want to reach out to Julie, you can reach out to her at Working Bridges, and there's no G, it's just an apostrophe after the N. Or you can email us at coolprojects, spelled with a K, at americaswebradio.com, and we will forward all of the questions you have for Julie that way as well. So have a great week, everyone. Julie, thank you again, and thank you for listening in to Cool Projects. Bye-bye for now.
You're listening to America's Web Radio Online. Thanks for tuning in.